I would like to, I'm not sure if Maharaj knows, but I would like to say who is with us today. So Maharaj.
That would be good.
Yeah.
Here are you. How about if somebody else reads and I'll just comment at intervals?
Okay. Any volunteers?
If the screen is shared, maybe we can take turns reading.
Which verse we are starting with? 23?
22.
22, okay.
Then I can just give a little bit of a reflection on last week, because we discussed the importance of invocation, which is both established and explained in the opening verses of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, which Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami has mercifully explained in some detail for our benefit, the nature, purpose, and necessity of the auspicious invocation as a preliminary for success in all spiritual undertakings. And we can do no better than to follow in his footsteps by attempting to explain the significance of the form of the auspicious observance. So the auspicious invocation consists of three different parts. One is the postulation, which is the hypothesis, the claim of the subject matter. Number two is the benedictory purpose, meaning the benedictions offered. And three is offering submissive obeisances, which Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami does not only at the beginning of his work, but actually at the beginning of every chapter and again at the end of every chapter. So he begins his treatise, which is the most exalted masterpiece of advanced theology that this world has ever known, with this auspicious invocation. And then he goes on to explain that the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya were made manifest to the vision of the souls of this world, so that all conditioned souls may be enabled thereby to attain realization of loving devotional service to Sri Sri Radha and Krishna, which constitutes the highest platform of service to the divinity. And the level of knowledge and realization that had never been divulged to any soul of this world by any former avatar or avatari. All this will appear in the hearts of all persons who really seek the truth by the causeless mercy of the son of Satyadevi. And Lord Chaitanya's pastimes are grounded in his divinity, which means that his purpose in coming was to understand the activity of the Ladini Shakti, born of the reciprocal love of Sri Sri Radha and Krishna, who, although one personality, divide themselves into the divine couple, who reunite in the form of Sri Krishna Chaitanya. To say that his pastimes are grounded in his divinity means that he comes for purposes of his own. And that is explained right in the beginning of Chaitanya Charitamrita. Desiring to understand the glory of Srimati Radharani's love, the wonderful qualities in him that she alone can relish through her love, and the sublime happiness she feels when she tastes the sweetness of his love. The Supreme Lord Hari, richly endowed with her emotions, appears from the womb of Srimati Sachidevi, like the moon arising from the ocean. That one verse crystallizes the essence of the internal significance and reasons for Lord Chaitanya's appearance. The secondary purpose of his appearance is the bestowal of loving devotional service to all conditioned souls. And this is elaborately revealed through the various shastras, the Gaudiya Vaishnava scriptures. His internal purpose is not explicitly mentioned in other scriptures. It is recognizable as their hidden import. And that which is implicit in other scriptures becomes explicit in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, where right after the auspicious invocation, Kaviraj Goswami delves right into the main purpose in Lord Chaitanya's appearance, being that Krishna is anxious to learn how Radha realizes his own sweetness and beauty. And in order to have this experience for himself, Sri Krishna dons the luster and the mood of Sri Radha and appears in the form of eternal union with her, alongside of and identical to the divine couple. This is the inner significance of the deeds of Sri Krishna Chaitanya, which distinguishes his Leela from that of Sri Krishna. And then Kaviraj Goswami goes on to glorify Sri Nityananda Ram and Sri Advaita Acharya, the inseparable associates integral with the appearance of Sri Chaitanya in this world, without whom it is not possible to realize the nature of Lord Chaitanya's pastimes without some knowledge and grace from Sri Nityananda Ram and Sri Advaita Acharya. Because it is through Lord Nityananda and Advaita Acharya that the connection between Sri Krishna and the mundane world is established and maintained. But that is a reflection on last week's reading and consideration of the auspicious invocation with which this Sri Chaitanya Charita begins. So now, who's going to read? Whoever it is, please begin.
I can read if that's okay. This is Danya.
Yes, Danya, please do. I want to hear from you.
Text 22. The invocation involves three processes: defining the objective, offering benedictions, and offering obeisances. Kumar, should I go on?
Yes.
Text 23. The first two verses offer respectful obeisances, generally and specifically to the Lord, who is the object of worship. Text 24. In the third verse, I indicate the absolute truth, who is the ultimate substance,
With such a description, one can visualize the supreme truth. In the fourth verse, I have invoked the benediction of the Lord upon all the world, praying to Lord Chaitanya for his mercy upon all. Text 26. In that verse, I have also explained the external reason for Lord Chaitanya's incarnation. But in the fifth and sixth verses, I have explained the prime reason for his advent. Guru Maharaj, I'm just going to keep going until you stop me. Is that okay?
Yes.
Text 27. In these six verses, I have described the truth about Lord Chaitanya, whereas in the next five, I have described the glory of Lord Nityananda. Text 28. The next two verses describe the truth of Advaita Prabhu, and the following verse describes the Panchatattva, the Lord, his plenary portion, his incarnation, his energies, and his devotees. Text 29. These 14 verses, therefore, offer auspicious invocations and describe the supreme truth. I offer my obeisances unto all my Vaishnava readers as I begin to explain the intricacies of all these verses. Text 31. I request all my Vaishnava readers to read and hear with rapt attention this narration of Sri Krishna Chaitanya as inculcated in the revealed scriptures. Text 32.
Let's read that purport. Purport to verse 31.
Okay. Purport. Lord Chaitanya is the absolute truth, Krishna himself. This is substantiated by evidence from the authentic spiritual scriptures. Sometimes people accept a man as God on the basis of their whimsical sentiments and without reference to the revealed scriptures. But the author of Chaitanya Charitamrita proves all his statements by citing the Shastras. Thus, he establishes that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the supreme personality of Godhead.
At this point, Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami and now Srila Prabhupada are imploring the readers not to approach this study with unnecessarily irreverent and superficial temperament, which will prevent his regarding the subject from the only genuine point of view, which is that of the scripture. It is only by loyally following the method of submitting to perceive the subject unreservedly from the point of view of the narrative itself that the impartial reader, after he has gone through this self-imposed discipline with patience, is due the right understanding of a subject which is likely to be radically different, especially for a Western audience, from most current standards in its outlook. Vaishnavism stands alone among the revealed religions of the world in providing a specific account of the name, form, qualities, and pastimes, and the individual personalities of the servitors of Godhead himself. The silence of other religions on this topic should not be misunderstood as implying their non-existence or any lack of specification in the absolute truth. There is also no rational ground for supposing that the Lord is unwilling or unable to disclose his own specific self and divine paraphernalia to the serving impulse of pure souls. So here at the transition of the invocation verses in their explanation, Kaviraj Goswami is beginning, and Srila Prabhupada is emphasizing the proper approach to the Shastra, which alone will award the desired result, and that is to read and hear with rapt attention this narration as inculcated in the revealed scriptures. So please continue. Danya?
Yes, I'm with you.
Lord,
verse 32, I think. Lord Krishna enjoys by manifesting himself as the spiritual masters, the devotees, the diverse energies, the incarnations, and the plenary portions. They are all six in one. I therefore worship the lotus feet of these six diversities of the one truth by invoking their benedictions. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the spiritual masters, the devotees of the Lord, the Lord's incarnations, his plenary portions, his energies, and the primeval Lord himself, Sri Krishna Chaitanya.
Okay, let's reconsider that verse, which is the first verse of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, which he is repeating here for emphasis. And the significance will be further revealed in Srila Prabhupada's purport, which you can read, please.
Sure. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami has composed this Sanskrit verse for the beginning of his book, and now he will explain it in detail. He offers his respectful obeisances to the six principles of the Absolute Truth. Gurun is plural in number because anyone who gives spiritual instructions based on the revealed scriptures is accepted as a spiritual master. Although others give help in showing the way to beginners, the guru who first initiates one with the Maha Mantra is to be known as the initiator, and the saints who give instructions for progressive advancement in Krishna consciousness are called instructing spiritual masters. The initiating and instructing spiritual masters are equal and identical manifestations of Krishna, although they have different dealings. Their function is to guide the conditioned souls back to Godhead. Therefore, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami accepted Nityananda Prabhu and the six Goswamis in the category of Guru. Isha Bhaktan refers to the devotees of the Lord like Sri Srivas and all the other such followers who are the energy of the Lord and are qualitatively non-different from him. Isha Vaktarakan refers to acharyas like Advaita Prabhu, who is an avatar of the Lord. Tat Prakashan indicates the direct manifestations of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Nityananda Prabhu, and the initiating spiritual master. Tak Chaktir refers to the spiritual energies, Shaktis, of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Gadadhar, Damodar, and Jagadananda belong to this category of internal energy. The six principles are differently manifested, but all equally worshipable. Krishnadas Kaviraj begins by offering his obeisance unto them to teach us the method of worshipping Lord Chaitanya. The external potency of Godhead called Maya can never associate with the Lord, just as darkness cannot remain in the presence of light. Yet darkness, being but an illusory and temporary covering of light, has no existence independent of light.
Okay, let's pause there to emphasize that submission to Sri Krishna, Sri Guru, and the Vaishnavas is the only condition for attaining to the loving devotion to the feet of Sri Krishna, Sri Radha Krishna, and their associates and devotees. The fulfillment of this condition assures the success in the undertaking by enabling all souls who hear the narrative of the deeds of Sri Krishna Chaitanya to obtain, by his grace, the highest quality of devotion to the lotus feet of Sri Sri Radha and Krishna. Okay, please continue.
Okay. Verse 35. I first offer my respectful obeisances at the lotus feet of my initiating spiritual master and all my instructing spiritual masters.
Okay. Now, time for questions and answers. Who is Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami's initiating spiritual master and instructing spiritual masters as revealed in the previous purport?
Are you asking us, Maharaj?
Yes.
Isn't I'm not sure which one, but isn't Raghunath Das Goswami his spiritual master?
Yes, his Siksha Guru.
Oh, it's his Siksha Guru.
Who is his Diksha Guru?
Oh.
He tells it himself in a few chapters, but it would be good to consider it at this point. He's mentioned him already in these verses. Verse 27. Yes, Vrindavananda is his Dikshu Guru, and Raghunath Das Goswami is his Siksha Guru, who lived next door, if they actually had doors in the Bhajan Kutirs, but the next Bhajan Kutir on the bank of Radhakund, where at the request of the devotees in Vrindavan, Raghunath Das Goswami would narrate the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya with emphasis on the later pastimes to which Raghunath Das Goswami was an eyewitness in the association of Sri Swarup Damodar. So that's one reason that there's more emphasis on the later pastimes than the early ones in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. And what is the other reason, for whoever would like to answer, in case you weren't attentive to the question, why Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita emphasizes more the later pastimes and only gives a hint to the early ones?
Isn't it because Lochan Das because Chaitanya Mangala was there and other texts were also there describing with more emphasis on the earlier pastimes, so that there
exactly primarily Sri Chaitanya Bhagavat, because Vrindavan Das Thakur is identified as Srila Veda Vyas for Chaitanya Lila. Kaviraj Goswami is also Veda Vyas. But Vrindavan Das Thakur, being a disciple of Lord Nityananda and inspired by him, who revealed Lord Chaitanya's pastimes within his heart, the heart of Srila Vrindavan Das Thakur, which he penned, when he began his work, Srila Vrindavan Das Thakur made an elaborate outline of what he intended to include in his work. And you can practically see in his writing that whenever he begins to glorify Lord Nityananda, he goes on and on and on, to the point that the corresponding emphasis on Lord Chaitanya is out of balance, in a sense. So he very elaborately described, and this is one of the appealing features of Chaitanya Bhagavat, is the detail. of the descriptions of the scenes in the bhavas, which excels over that of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, especially in the early pastimes. So because he was for so long in the course of writing his text, Vrindavan Das Thakur, so lost in rapture in describing the glories of Lord Nityananda, his guru, he considered toward the end of the work that he had not awarded sufficient time and text to the glories of Lord Gauranga. And so therefore, the later pastimes are very scant in Chaitanya Bhagavat. And Vrindavan Das Thakur, you can see in his text, he stopped writing almost abruptly because he saw that he was going on in that course. So he didn't want to make his book too long, so he concluded it with the assurance in his own writing that Srila Vyasadeva will continue where I left off. And that continuation is here in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. So once again, Srila Prabhupada says in the purport that Kaviraj Goswami accepted Lord Nityananda and the six Goswamis in the category of guru. And amongst the six Goswamis, his specific prime Siksha guru was Raghunath Das Goswami himself. And because the devotees of Vrindavan, most of whom were unaware of Lord Chaitanya's later and final pastimes and were fearful that those pastimes be lost to posterity, they requested Raghunath Das Goswami to narrate, which he did every day on the banks of Radhakund. And because Krishna Das, as his name implies, was the Kaviraj, they requested him to write down the pastimes that we are hearing tonight in the form of Chaitanya Charitamrita. So once again, he keeps reiterating this important point that submission, with emphasis on oral reception to Sri Krishna, Sri Guru, and the Vaishnavas, is the only condition to attaining loving devotion to the feet of Sri Krishna and his devotees. It is the fulfillment of this condition which assures success in the undertaking by enabling all persons who hear this divine narrative to obtain the grace of Lord Gauranga in the form of the highest, most confidential quality of devotional service to the lotus feet of Sri Sri Radha and Krishna. Okay, please continue.
Maharaj?
Yes?
Would it be okay if we ask if anyone has a question?
Yes.
So,
any questions?
At this point. Okay. I guess there's none. So let's just continue.
And we'll maybe reiterate at this point what we introduced last week. That a further comment on the proper mood for the study of Shastra is the endeavor to understand and imbibe the mood of the author so that through him we can discern the heartbeat of Krishna within the Shastra, which is another way of saying that Krishna will reveal in our hearts the pastimes and precepts of Lord Gauranga. Okay. Continue, please.
Okay. And I'm happy to continue reading, or if anyone else is inspired, that's wonderful as well.
And if so, please speak up.
Right. Could you go to the next verse, please, Sita Didi? We were on 36.
Can you read the purport, or?
I think we were just reading the next verse. Text 36. My instructing spiritual masters are Sri Rupa Goswami, Sri Sanatan Goswami, Sri Bhatta Raghunath, Sri Jiva Goswami, Sri Gopal Bhatta Goswami, and Srila Raghunath Das Goswami. These six are my instructing spiritual masters, and therefore I offer millions of respectful obeisances unto their lotus feet. Should we continue? Next verse.
Sorry, are we reading the purports or are we not reading the purports? I just want to make
Only when Guru Maharaj was saying to read the purport. That's what we had done before.
Well, maybe at this point, just to reflect a little bit on last week, because here Kaviraj Goswami is emphasizing the six Goswamis, and previous in the text, he is offering obeisances and glory to the three cardinal truths and their personification, both in the deities and the acharyas and the temples of Vrindavan. Those three cardinal truths of Gaudiya Vaishnava Siddhanta are Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana. The Sambandha Murti is Madan Mohan, whose very name implies that he is the attractor even of Cupid. Cupid, who holds all souls bound in this world, himself is attracted by Madan Mohan, whose attraction can also deliver our hearts from the thraldom of material bondage and direct them back to Sri Krishna, that is Sambandha. The deity being Madan Mohan, and the Acharya, who also discovered or rediscovered and established that deity, is Sanatana Goswami. He next offers his obeisances by describing how in a temple of jewels in Vrindavan, beneath a desire tree, Sri Sri Radha Govinda, served by their most confidential associates, sit upon an effulgent throne, and I offer my humble obeisances unto them. So this is Sri Sri Radha Govinda, whose acharya, who also rediscovered and established the worship in the temple of Radha Govinda is Srila Rupa Goswami. Then Kaviraj Goswami goes on to explain that Sri Srila Gopinath, who originated the transcendental mellow of the Rasa dance, stands on the shore in Vamsivat and attracts the attention of the cowherd damsels with the sound of his celebrated flute. May they all confer upon us their benediction. So, Radha Govinda are the Abhideya Murti, for whom Srila Rupa Goswami is the Acharya. Abhideya means that after the effects of Madan Mohan in Sambandha, severing our relationship with this world and establishing our relationship with Krishna, the next item is Abhideya, acting upon that principle by devotional service, for whom the Murti, the deity of that principle, Sri Sri Radha Govinda, and their Acharya, Srila Rupa Goswami, assist us. And the perfection of devotional service is awarded by Sri Sri Radha Gopinath and their Acharya, who was not the one who discovered them, that was Madhu Pandit and his friend Paramananda, but the Acharya, Raghunath Das Goswami, and his worshipable Lord, Sri Sri Radha Gopinath, both represent the highest level of devotional service and help us to attain that supreme goal. So, that highest level of devotional service, as exemplified in the gopis who were attracted to the flute song of Sri Gopinath, personify something that is lacking in all revealed scriptures, with the single exception of Srimad Bhagavatam. All other shastras are, to a more or less extent, the textbooks of reverential worship. And the most confidential form of devotional service, personified in the gopis, whose mood Lord Chaitanya came to experience and reveal through his own pastimes and precepts, Kaviraj Goswami is invoking the blessings of Sri Sri Radha Gopinath, who attracted the gopis by the song of his flute, to similarly attract our hearts to his loving devotional service through the divine sound of this transcendental narrative of the pastimes and precepts of Sri Krishna Chaitanya. Okay, please continue.
Text 38. There are innumerable devotees of the Lord, of whom Srivas Thakur is the foremost. I offer my respectful obeisances thousands of times unto his lotus feet. Advaita Acharya is the Lord's partial incarnation, and therefore I offer my obeisances millions of times at his lotus feet. Srila Nityananda Ram is the plenary manifestation of the Lord, and I have been initiated by him. I therefore offer my respectful obeisances unto his lotus feet.
I offer my respectful obeisances unto the internal potencies of the Lord, of whom Gadadhar Prabhu is the foremost.
Okay, hold it there a minute. Here, Kaviraj Goswami is revealing how Sri Nityananda Ram and Sri Advaita Acharya are inseparably associated with the appearance of Lord Chaitanya in this world. And it is not possible to realize the nature of the appearance and pastimes of Lord Chaitanya without knowledge of Sri Nityananda Ram and Sri Advaita Acharya, through whom the connection of Sri Krishna and this mundane world is established and maintained. Okay, continue, please.
Text 42. Lord Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the personality of Godhead himself, and therefore I offer innumerable prostrations at his lotus feet. Having offered obeisances unto the Lord and all his associates, I shall now try to explain these six diversities in one.
Okay, this is an appropriate purport, so please read that.
One moment, please. There are many unalloyed devotees of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, all of whom are considered associates surrounding the Lord. Krishna should be worshipped with his devotees. The diverse principles are therefore the eternal paraphernalia through which the absolute truth can be approached.
Okay, that's a very important point. So, backtracking a little bit for emphasis. Amongst the innumerable devotees, Kaviraj Goswami cites Srivas Thakur as foremost. And then he offers his obeisances to the internal potencies, of whom Sri Gadadhar Pandit is foremost. Now, who is Gadadhar Pandit in Krishna Lila?
Radharani?
Yes. In that statement, that answer needs to be qualified. Because isn't Lord Chaitanya the combined form of Sri Sri Radha and Krishna? Yes. Therefore, why is there the necessity for another personality of Srimati Radharani? So, in anticipation that you're all going to speak at once, try to beat you to it. The moods of Lord Gauranga are ever changing. And basically, they're vacillating between his identity as Krishna, which is prominent in his early pastimes, and his identity of Radha, which is more prominent in his later pastimes. So when Lord Gauranga is in the mood of Krishna, he interacts with Gadadhar Pandit as Radha. When Lord Gauranga is in the mood of Radha, he interacts with Gadadhar Pandit as being his beloved friend Lalita. So that may appear a little esoteric, but it's essential to consider the esoteric, which is the nature of this work. And this fact this truth that Lord Gauranga's moods are ever changing, we will see revealed in the later texts of this work. Continue reading, please.
Although I know that my spiritual master is a servitor of Sri Chaitanya, I know him also as a plenary manifestation of the Lord.
That's an important purport, so please read that as well.
Every living entity is essentially a servant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and the spiritual master is also his servant. Still, the spiritual master is a direct manifestation of the Lord. With this conviction, a disciple can advance in Krishna consciousness. The spiritual master is non-different from Krishna because he is a manifestation of Krishna. Lord Nityananda, who is Balaram himself, the first direct manifestation or expansion of Krishna, is the original spiritual master. He helps Lord Krishna in his pastimes, and he is a servant of the Lord. Every living entity is eternally a servant of Sri Krishna Chaitanya. Therefore, the spiritual master cannot be other than a servant of Lord Chaitanya. The spiritual master's eternal occupation is to expand the service of the Lord by training disciples in a service attitude. A spiritual master never poses as the Supreme Lord himself. He is considered a representative of the Lord. The revealed scriptures prohibit one's pretending to be God, but a bona fide spiritual master is a most faithful and confidential servant of the Lord, and therefore deserves as much respect as Krishna.
Okay. That purport was the essence of Srila Prabhupada's Vyasa Puja lecture, which he so graciously offered here in New Vrindavan in 1972, on top of the what we call the Bhagavad Dharma Discourse Hill, because his divine grace was here for his Bhagavad Dharma Discourse, within which time Sri Krishna Dhanmashtami, when Sri Sri Radha Vrindavan Chandra moved into their new temple, the Pahulavan, occurred, following by Srila Prabhupada's Vyasa Puja. So, Dhanmashtami was celebrated in Sri Sri Radha Vrindavan Chandra's temple. And the next morning, the celebrations moved to the pavilion on the top of Bhagavad Dharma Discourse Hill. And it was a mixed audience. It was devotees. Some devotees' parents were present. Some locals were present. And some news reporters were present. And Srila Prabhupada so perfectly explained the meaning of Sri Vyasa Puja to the satisfaction of all the different personalities and different mentalities present. So he began his lecture, I'll paraphrase, by saying that you might be wondering what I'm doing sitting on this elevated seat with my disciples at my feet, offering obeisances as I speak on the topic of humility. And he went on to explain that a spiritual master is like the viceroy who, on behalf of the king, accepts offerings to be made to the king. But everything has to be delivered to the king, and nothing can be kept by the viceroy himself. So he explained that Krishna is the king of all kings, and I'm serving as his viceroy, accepting the obeisances of these disciples as I train them in humility. But I'm not considering that any of this worship is meant for me. I'm offering it all on the behalf of my disciples to Krishna. And then I would add my own comment here that in reciprocation, to Sri Guru offering disciples worship and praise to Krishna, ascending through the parampara, in reciprocation, because we have to be very attentive to reciprocation if we want to maintain and increase our taste in devotional service. You can't do it without experiencing reciprocation. So in reciprocation to Sri Guru, offering our praise and worship to Krishna, Krishna's divine grace descends through parampara, and that is why we address Srila Prabhupada as his divine grace. So one parent of a devotee who was present there, and he was, previously a little apprehensive about his daughter surrendering to Srila Prabhupada, and he commented after that lecture that now all his concerns were perfectly assuaged. And then you won't hear it on the recording, unfortunately, but I'll share it with you. One person asked Srila Prabhupada, "How do you compare yourself to Jesus Christ?" And Srila Prabhupada said that, in all sincerity, Jesus Christ is the Son of God. I am the dog of God. Because he also mentioned, I think it was in that lecture, that it's very difficult to impress a big, important man. If you want to impress him with wealth, you have to offer huge sums. But if you simply show affection for his dog, or maybe his son, which can be accomplished just by offering a simple lozenge, then that big man will become very favorably inclined to you. So, what verse are we on now?
44,
okay. Okay. Then continue, 45, please.
Okay. It's almost 7 o'clock.
Is that when we're supposed to stop?
I mean, I'm just a timekeeper as well. So would you like to do a little bit more and then ask for questions, or what would you like?
Let's just do 45 verse and purport, and then we can open for questions.
Okay.
Verse 45. According to the deliberate opinion of all revealed scriptures, the spiritual master is non-different from Krishna. Lord Krishna, in the form of the spiritual master, delivers his devotees. Purport. The relationship of a disciple with his spiritual master is as good as his relationship with the Supreme Lord. A spiritual master always represents himself as the humblest servitor of the personality of Godhead, but the disciple must look upon him as the manifested representation of Godhead.
Thank you for your reading, Danya. I would just like to comment on this verse in purport that in the early days, 1966, when Srila Prabhupada told the devotees there would be initiations, and the first initiations were granted, during that lecture, Srila Prabhupada said that initiation means you're accepting the spiritual master as good as God. And the devotees were so shocked, they'd never heard anything like that before. So afterwards, they gathered amongst themselves and shared, did you hear what he said? You know, we took initiation in good faith, but then he revealed that that means you have to accept him as good as God. And they were shocked and bewildered and baffled. And then Kirtananda Swami told them, well, aren't you doing that already? You're following his instructions. You do whatever he says. You've already accepted him as good as God. Doesn't mean he's God. He's the most humble servant of God. And initiation is simply the acknowledgement of that truth. Okay, any questions or comments, please?
I have a question.
Yes.
Maharaj, this is Pritam. My question is, now, is the relationship between a disciple and a spiritual master eternal? That's part A of the question. And the part B of the question is, the spiritual name, the initiated name that a spiritual master gives to a disciple, is that initiated name also eternal? Like when you go to, let's say, go back to Godhead, do you still retain the same spiritual name? Or do you have a different name according to your swarup in the spiritual world?
Thank you for that question.
I'm sorry if this question is very basic and fundamental, but I had the urge to ask this question for a long time.
Well, thank you for that, asking that question, and it's so nice to hear your voice again.
Interesting, Maharaj. Thank you.
Yes, the relationship between guru and disciple is eternal on the condition that the disciple continues to follow the instruction and maintain the vows of initiation. Now, guru is like an agency in which there are many representatives. So the relationship with guru is eternal. And yet, as we advance through the different spheres of realization, there may come a time when Sri Guru will place you in the care of another guru to help you in a particular mood and service to Krishna. So relationship with guru as an agency is eternal. And the relationship with any particular representative within that agency is also eternal. And you hear, even thus far in Chaitanya Charitamrita, that Kaviraj Goswami is emphasizing as the gurus with whom his relationship is eternal as being Lord Nityananda Prabhu himself and Srila Raghunath Das Goswami. And that also affects the name, because even we see in this lifetime a guru gives a specific name at the time of initiation, and then he may call a devotee by a nickname. Or sometimes the nickname will be given by Vaishnavas, or possibly by a guru from another guru. And that does not necessarily imply the grave offense of reinitiation. It simply means that the assembly of devotees acknowledge certain characteristics, certain traits in a disciple for which they award a nickname. So we see that even in this lifetime. So throughout the course of lifetimes, until we're back home, which hopefully we'll achieve at the end of this lifetime, our name may change. But one part of it will never change, and that is the Das or the Dasi. Mm-hmm. Thank you for that question. Does that answer your concerns?
Yes, Maharaj. Yes, Maharaj. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Anybody else?
Madri, can you hear me?
Yes.
Can I ask a question? I don't know how to raise my hand.
We're hearing you. You don't need to raise your hand. You're good. Go ahead.
Maharaj, you were talking about reciprocation and how important it is. And there seems like there's so many ways to reciprocate. And sometimes we think our ways of reciprocating are the best ways. But could you just speak about how we can reciprocate and which reciprocation is most appropriate or most, conducive to our spiritual advancement?
Thank you for that most relevant question. We need to experience reciprocation both from Krishna and the devotees. And we need to offer reciprocation both to the devotees and to Krishna. And that offering of reciprocation is a matter of service. It is one of the six loving exchanges to offer reciprocation. So this brings us to the question is of what is service? We like to think that anything we do is service. But to qualify as actual devotional service, whether to Krishna or to the devotees, of course, there's two basic categories of service. There's favorable and unfavorable. And there's three categories, first class, second class, third class. First class servant, let's take it from the bottom up. Third class servant basically does whatever he wants, and he tries to dovetail that in service to Vaishnavas and Guru. So that's dovetailing at best. Second class servant does what he's asked. First class servant is so attuned to the heart of the master, whether that be Krishna, Guru, or Vaishnava, that he knows what to do. And what to do is to please the master, whether that be Vaishnava, Guru, or Krishna. Desirable service means that which is pleasing to the master, which is most perfected in the first class servant who knows the mood and heart of the master, little less in the second class, diminished more in the third class. The other way to look at it is that, first of all, to qualify as devotional service, you have to be conscious of what you're doing. It's not that you just mechanically go through some acts and consider that devotional service. Although the mechanics and the rituals are very important, it's the consciousness. Krishna consciousness means, first of all, to be conscious of what you're doing, why you're doing it, and who you're doing it for. And that consciousness should be aimed at pleasing the recipient of your service. Now, I know where your next question is likely to be, and that is, it could be a combination. How do we know if the master is pleased. If you're not sure, you can always ask. And another level that comes up frequently in discussion is, well, what, say we're trying to please a neophyte devotee, and we're offering service for the benefit of their soul, but they may not realize that because they're still under the influence of false ego. So they'll be very pleased if you satisfy their false ego, and they may not be so pleased if you satisfy their soul. So what to do in that situation? Our foremost consideration is the welfare of the soul. And if there is still false ego involved in the acceptance of our service, then you have to be creative in how your offering is made in such a way that the recipient is aware that you have actual concern for his or her soul, even if their ego may be a little displeased in the process. Does that answer your question?
Wow, that was way more than I asked for. So that means we got to be really conscious.
Thank you.
Yeah, that was an awesome answer.
First of all, be conscious of what the term Krishna consciousness means.
Yeah, and we got to be conscious.
Foremost, we're conscious of Krishna, but Krishna is in everything, and everything is in Krishna. So that means we have to be very conscious.
Very conscious. Very conscious. And conscious of who are we reciprocating with, the soul or their ego?
And if there's a difference between the two, which there may be in the neophyte stage, how to offer our service in such a way as to integrate. Of course, we're talking ego here, meaning implying false ego. Mm-hmm. But the art is how to deliver the false ego into the whatever you want to call it, the real, friendly, eternal ego, which is servant of the servant of the servant. So when one is still identifying himself with the false ego in terms of being master, and you're wanting to please that person, there's nothing so pleasing as experiencing your false ego dissolving, but it can be very painful. And as a matter of compassion, we want to offer some anesthesia. No, not anesthesia. Anesthesia puts you to sleep, right?
Yeah.
Analgesics.
Right.
That softens the pain. We know the truth that there's nothing so pleasing as experiencing your false ego dissolving and your real, true, friendly ego becoming manifest. But in that spiritual pleasure, there may be some conditional pain, and we don't wish that pain upon anyone. Although we understand it's for their benefit, it's our obligation to offer whatever analgesics we can. And of all forms of natural analgesics, love is the foremost. Love and its counterpart, compassion. If you demonstrate those qualities in your dealings, then the recipient of your service will be most pleased.
Thank you. That was really a deep and awesome answer and very, very relevant.
Well, thank you for the surprise. We didn't know you were with us tonight.
I came in a little late, I must say.
Well, nice to hear you.
Yeah, nice to be here.
Nice to have you here. Thank you.
May I ask a follow-up question to this question?
Go ahead.
I just had a question around, particularly around
around consent, right? In terms of reciprocity, right? Because we know of examples like Narottam Das Thakur doing the seva, continuing to do the seva for Lokanath Goswami, right?
Yeah.
You know, so I'm just, I have a curiosity around like honoring people's no as seva. That's one part. And just also that the, I guess maybe like not a, exactly a checklist, but some kind of like, how does one, so you know, the most elevated devotee may anticipate the, you know, the desire or the need of the Vaishnava, or, you know, but I'm also just curious if there's a way for folks to like really be able to check and say, okay, is this truly an anticipation, or is this like a way that I may not be honoring, you know, I just like may not be honoring someone's no, or just something around consent, right? Because also I feel like there's ways that sometimes some things can be done with like, oh, this is good for your, to dissolve your ego, you know, kind of thing. Just to, yeah, I'm just curious. And also because we have that example of like Narottam Das Thakur, who continued despite Loknath Goswami saying, please, no, I'm not going to take it as a disciple.
Okay, well, that example of Narottam Das Thakur and Loknath Goswami is like archetypal in terms of this concept of consent. And consent is related to assimilation. Is what you're offering assimilated by the recipient? And we have to consider that, you know, in such things as just giving a class. Is what you're revealing going to be assimilated by your audience? Otherwise, it's of diminished significance. And we also have to be very attentive that we're developing the qualities to assimilate, which is explained by Narada Muni in, you know, his previous life as the son of the maidservant. And when the sadhus came and she was serving them during Chaturmasya, and they were reciting scripture every day, he says, my qualification for imbibing their blessings was I was very gentle and submissive and attentive in my service. That evoked their blessings, by which I was able to assimilate their message, by which I became Narada Muni, who is Srivas Thakur in the Panchatattva. So, back to Narottam Das Thakur and Lokanath Goswami. If you, in case anybody here is not aware of the pastime, when Narottam Das Thakur arrived in Vrindavan, he was so attracted by the devotional qualities and the extreme humility in Lokanath Das Goswami, who had sworn that he would never accept disciples, and yet Narottam Das Thakur saw in him the vision and the identity of his spiritual master. So in his exceeding humility, Lokanath Goswami refused to accept service and refused Narottam Das Thakur's humble request to be his disciple. So therefore, Narottam Das Thakur, and back to this potency of invisibility, he kept himself invisible. And he went to the place where Lokanath Goswami would bathe and perform other menial bodily services in the morning, in the dark, before Brahma Muhurta. Now, at this time, Lokanath Goswami is very elderly and, you know, not too much aware of the external world. But then it dawned on him, when every day he came to the same place where he would answer the call of nature, everything was so clean and fragrant and tidy that he finally understood that somebody is coming when I'm not here and offering service. So he hid in the bushes to watch, and he saw Narottam Das Thakura come out, and in great enthusiasm, while chanting the holy name, cleaning the place with such attention to every detail. So then Lokanath Goswami came out of the bushes and said, "What are you doing? You're a prince," which he was, born a prince. "Why are you submitting to this lowly menial service to me?" And he said, "Well, you know, you may not, you know, accept me, but I'm still going to, you may not accept me as your disciple, but I'm still going to serve you." And then the response was exemplary. Lokanath Das Goswami told Srila Narottam Das Thakur that your determination has excelled over mine, and therefore, although I have vowed to never take disciples, I will accept you. But he was the only one. So in this case, Srila Narottam Das Thakur was serving Lokanath Goswami without his consent. And your question is what to do when you don't have the consent. Well, in this case, Narottam Das Thakur had the realization that this was Krishna's plan and arrangement. So he had the consent of Krishna, which revealed itself in time. Now, we may not have the realization to know for sure if we have the consent of Krishna in offering services without the consent of the recipient. So the safe thing is, if you don't know, then ask. And the best thing is to become so pure and so attuned to the will of Krishna that that consent will be evoked, as it was in this classic pastime of Srila Narottam Das Thakur and Srila Lokanath Das Goswami. Does that answer your question?
Yes, thank you. I was also remembering in Mahabharata, is it Ekalavya who has to, who's serving without consent and is actually asked for his thumb, is it his thumb, in charity, because it wasn't, it was like, you know, a different type of situation, and like how profoundly, how the differences between those two episodes. So deeply appreciating your response. Thank you.
Thank you for your question. Did I see Kumari's name on the phone before? As
she's with us, Maharaj.
Yes, Maharaj.
I'm not only hearing it, but seeing you too. This is amazing.
Thank you so much for your association virtually. This means a lot to us who are very disconnected and far away.
Well, the reciprocation means a lot to me. Thank you so much.
I was thinking, Kumari, that you probably liked the answer Maharaj gave to Mother Sukavaha's question about being conscious. I still remember what you said during the hour Maharaj's birthday / Vyasa Puja ceremony, what you said, that you desire to be conscious of everything at any moment.
Still an ongoing effort.
Just a side note. Do you have a question, Kumari? Or?
No, please go ahead, Madhu.
Okay. So I have a question, Maharaj. You mentioned...
You can always depend on Madhu to have a wonderful question.
And if no, then we will close with that unless someone else has something. So you mentioned that submission to Sri Guru, Sri Krishna and the Vaishnavas is the condition to attain love of Krishna. How do we...
Beginning with their blessings, it's the condition receiving... It's the condition for receiving the blessings in the form of devotional service to Sri Sri Radha and Krishna. You skipped one step in that dynamic. The submission evokes or invokes, in this case, the blessings. And the blessings is the condition for unconditional service.
My question is how to practically understand the submission to the Vaishnavas. I mean, because it's not like we are going to submit to everyone and anyone around us.
Yes, and that's why, or part, one of the reasons why Kabiraj Goswami in the invocation and following is repeating how Krishna, Guru, and Vaishnavas are all so integrated. He's talking here about pure Vaishnavas. So your submission has to be reserved either for pure Vaishnavas or for Vaishnavas who at least are acting purely in their request of you. If the request is pure, you can submit. Even if the recipient is not completely pure, if his request to which you're submitting is pure, that's as good. But in his repetition of Krishna, Guru, and Vaishnavas being on all the same level, he's talking about pure Vaishnavas. And that's why he is emphasizing the relationship between Lord Gauranga, Sri Nityananda Ram, and Lord Advaitacharya. Because Advaitacharya is the archetypal pure Vaishnava and representative of all pure Vaishnavas. That is the... And the manifestation of the Lord. Sri Advaitacharya is the manifestation of the Lord as Vaishnava, meaning pure Vaishnava.
Is it not Srinivas Thakur Maharaj? I'm not. You're saying
Srinivas Thakur is empowered Jiva, which is also overlapping in the categories of Vaishnava and Guru. But Srinivas Thakur is Jiva. Advaitacharya is Vishnu Tattva. And Kaviraj Goswami is offering submission to both, which reveals the connection between the Lord as a devotee and the devotee and the Lord as Vaishnava, which is Advaitacharya, and the Jiva as Vaishnava, foremost of whom being Srivas Thakur, because he's empowered, because he's completely pure, although he's jiva, he's in the same category. He's in the panchatattva. He is an equal representation of the absolute truth, as is the Lord himself. So, there again, submission should never be blind or indiscriminate. It should be offered with utmost discernment. Is the personality to whom I'm submitting worthy? Or at least, is the request worthy of my submission? You have to maintain that discretion and discernment. Otherwise, you might be cheated and disappointed.
Yes. Thank you, Maharaj.
Thank you, Mati.
Anyone else would like to add anything or ask anything? It's 7:30.
Well, hearing all of you and seeing some of you on this cold wintry evening in New Vrindavan brings back reflections of Mother Ladini's famous poem, Vrindavan, Vrindavan, all covered with snow, where have the Sarabi cows all gone? I don't know if any of you are familiar with that poem, but that was the opening verse, Vrindavan. And back in those days, and she reveals it in her poem, that everything was frozen inside and out. And yet, as her poem progresses, and she describes the warmth in the association of devotees congregating in Krishna Katha, it makes that cold winter evening in New Vrindavan, where everything is covered with snow, so warm and comforting to the heart. So thank you all for evoking remembrances of that precious poem and the precious truth it expresses in poetic fashion. My deep gratitude to all of you for your association. I look forward to hearing and seeing you again next week. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Thanks, Maharaj.